This is an interview with a resident of Stellarton who was born in 1915 and spent all her life in the Ashfeld and Brown Row areas of Stellarton. What do you first remember about this area?
I can remember it to the early 20s there, especially in 25 when they had that big strike. Mm-hmm. It was over the unions. There's three unions in here at that time, the AMW and the OBU. The UMW, well, the OBU was trying to get in here as a union. My father was working. Well, my father was working for that union.
That's the OBU.
The OBU, and there used to be friends of his come there, and they used to get those papers every week. And I was only, 6 or 7, something like that. And he used to get me to take them and go out to the mines there and sell them. And I'd go over to this place where the men would get on the train at to go to Westlock. And the men always saved us sandwiches in their cans. They always, all us kids there in Brown Row, especially our family anyway, because we were so poor, I guess they knew we didn't have anything to eat. So we'd meet them, even when I wasn't selling the papers, we'd meet them, and they always gave us a sandwich and that out of their can. And I'd sell them papers. I think it was only 3 cents that they sold them papers for at that time. And but anyway, they had a soup kitchen set up.
Out of the mines?
No, just right over, not far from our place. You had to go through the field to get the soup. And they used to have those cracker cans, they called them. They were 2-pound cracker cans.
Uh-huh.
And for all that family that we had there, I used to have to go over and get that soup, and it would be that one cracker can filled.
How many were in your family living in the house?
Well, then there would be myself, and my mother, and my father, and myself, and my oldest sister, my brother, and there'd be 1, 2, 3, 4. There'd be 4 younger than me again at that time.
So there would be 7 of you in the house. And
on that one can of soup.
And was that all that you had to eat in a day? What did you eat in the run of a day at that time?
Well, my mother made bread. In those days, you used to buy the old Royal East Cakes that came in a box, 8 little squares.
Mm-hmm.
And they were right hard could be. And at night, you'd take them, you'd soak them in water, and then take a little bit of flour and mix that in with it and make a sponge out of it. And you let that sponge set all night. And the next morning, she'd take that sponge and put flour in it and a little bit of salt, and that was what the bread was.
That's what you call bread.
There was no sugar, no shortening or anything, because she never had it to put in. So that's what the bread was. It was very hard, and you couldn't believe what it looked like. And that was the only thing we ever had in the line of
that and the soup.
Bread. Yeah, that and the soup. And porridge. We'd have porridge in the morning with molasses. We'd come home when I did go to school.
Mm-hmm.
At dinner time, there'd be porridge and molasses again. And maybe at supper time, she'd boil beans, and they'd be right white, just boiled on the stove.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd just eat them like that. And as for meat, she didn't know what it was to have any meat. Do you know what she'd do when them farmers would come around, like on a weekend there?
Mm-hmm.
She'd get a few potatoes and turnip from them. She used to take the potato and turnip and boil them together and mash them. And then she'd take an onion and put it in the frying pan and brown it, and then pour hot water in on it and then thicken it. And that was the gravy, and that's what we'd have.
And that was, would you have that every day, or that
once
a week?
That
was your treat.
Yeah, right.
Your big meal
of
the week. Now, your father was working in the mines, was he?
Yes.
And did he work every day?
No. He'd be lucky if he got 1, 2, maybe 3 days a week. Because every day at 3 o'clock, they had whistles out there at the mine that used to blow. If there was no work, they'd blow 5 whistles. So
They would know whether there was
work the next day. So even if he did get one day, in them days he'd only make $2 and something a day. That's all his pay would be, not an hour, a day.
And that, and he would get maybe 2 days work a week,
yeah,
if he was lucky.
If he was lucky.
So he was trying to feed a family of 7 people on a boat for $4.50 a week.
That's right.
Now you were living in a company house, were you?
Yes.
And he had to pay?
Well, the company took the rent off. You paid through the company for your rent.
Before you got your paycheck, they deducted everything.
Oh yeah, and your coal, when you buy a ton of coal, mm-hmm, that was taken off of their pay too. So some weeks they'd end up, if they had a load of coal off,
you'd end up with pretty much nothing.
And not only that, we used to have to go and pick coal. We'd take potato sacks, old coal scuttles, and we'd go to the dump out there, and we'd lug it home, and that's just kids.
How old would you be at that time?
Well,
8 years, 7?
No, I wouldn't be 8. I was gone when I was 8 working. Because I went over Plymouth there to work. But, oh yeah, but in that 1925 strike, in the town of Stellarton, they had a big store set up down there, I think it was Moreau's, where the unions used to send in stuff there, food.
For the mining families?
For the mining families. And I see me go down there, there was no paved streets or anything in those days, mm-hmm, it was just all dirt streets. And I didn't know what it was to have ever shoes on my feet, like all summer long. And we'd go down there and sit down, stay down street down there all day long, waiting for something, molasses or a bag of flour or something like that, to come into that store down there.
So that you'd have something
that
to take home,
we'd have
that
something
the family
to take
could
home,
eat.
Yeah. And then we'd go and we'd pick blueberries and sell them for 25 cents a gallon.
A gallon?
A gallon, 25 cents. We'd go down the street with them, down to the ones that did have money, like the doctors or that. I remember I always used to go to Dr. Parker's wife. She was very good to me, you know, as a kid. She always bought them from me. But when I got that 25 cents, I had to bring it home and give it to my mother to buy like molasses or
something to put
something
on the table.
That's right.
Now, when your father, he was very involved with the unions, wasn't
he?
Oh, yes. He was a strong union member.
Mm-hmm.
So he was involved in all the strikes.
That's right.
Did they have a lot of scab labor that you can remember? Can you remember anything being done to scabs?
Oh yes, I can remember out there at the mines, there was a big pond out there.
The duck pond, is that what it's called?
Well, I don't know, we always called it the miner's pond or something,
uh-huh,
I don't know, but it was right there by the pit head anyway. And I can remember them out there all fighting in that and throwing them in
into
that
the pond.
Throwing the scabs.
As kids, did you used to go up around the mine?
Well, we lived right by the mine at one time, right alongside of the mine. It got so dangerous there that they made us move away. They sent us up to a place that was named Bullpen. It was just up above us. And because we were right alongside of the washhouse at the pit there with the men.
Was it a company house that you were in?
Yeah.
So the company had built a house that close to the pit.
But it got too dangerous, you know, as years came on, they thought for us living there, so they moved us up into this place named Bullpen, and we were only up there about maybe 6 or 7 months then when we moved down to Brown Mill.
Now, your mother's family increased. She didn't stop with four children.
No, she had a baby every year. Maybe it wasn't a year.
And there was about 13 at one time in your house?
Yeah.
With not counting your mother and father.
That's right.
And you were all trying to live on roughly about $2.50 a week by the time he had his deductions taken off.
That's right.
How in the name of God did you do it?
Well, we didn't. I can remember over there in Brown Row, we had a neighbors that lived down below us. And they didn't have as many children as we had. They only had 2 girls and a boy. And I used to play with one of their girls, and I can remember being down there, and I'd be sitting there in the corner waiting for this girl, you know, to come out and play, and they'd be having their dinner, and they'd be having jam and bread, and I'd sit there and my tongue would just be hanging out, and they were so mean that they wouldn't even offer you a bite to eat. And many's the time I sat there and how I'd wish on the staffs that, you know, she'd give me a slice of bread, that bread with that jam on it. Wouldn't offer you a bite, not for anything.
Do you remember going hungry?
Sure, I remember going hungry. Not only that, I can remember Geno's when they first started their bakery. It was up above us here. We used to go up there. They always gave us their old stale bread. They used to ground peddle bread in a two-wheel cart at that time. And they were really good to us. My mother was always saying this with a note down to my Aunt Annie that lived down. You know, they had a little bit more. They didn't have it quite as hard as we had it. So I'd go down there. She'd send us down there to look for something. Aunt Annie maybe would bake something and give it to us to take off, or give us some bread and molasses or butter or whatever it would be. But I was always on the run, going here and going there, looking for something so Mum would have something for Papa when he'd go to work and not to put in his lunch can and that.
What do you remember as a family life now at home? Do you remember, sir, did you do anything as a family, or was it just there wasn't money, so there wasn't anything to
there
do?
There just wasn't anything all you to do, even in our house. We had a great big living room. It had all bare floor on. All that was in it was a potbelly stove and one of those old lounges, they call them in them days. It was just a long thing with a head on it, like, and a great big old sideboard, we called it. And I remember the kerosene lamp always set on that. And see, we had no power over there in those days. It was kerosene lamps we had. Mm-hmm. And that's all there was in that room. And then there was two bedrooms off of that. There was the bedroom my mother slept in, but all that was in that was a bed. And then upstairs, us kids slept up there. And there was one bedroom up there, and we had two beds.
For 13 children?
Well, there wasn't like 13 then, like, you know.
Okay, for five or six, seven?
Yeah, there'd be six, seven anyway. Mm-hmm. And all that was up there was two beds, and my mother used to get a bale of straw, and she'd buy factory cotton. You'd get 10 yards of factory cotton for a dollar or something, maybe not even that in those days. And she'd sew it up and make a tick out of it and fill that
with straw,
and that was our mattress. Even when she'd have her babies, you know, she always had them at home, she always had to get some new factory cotton and make a new mattress to have her babies on. And as for bed clothes, I don't remember having any bed clothes.
No blankets?
Outside of an old gray blanket. And then on top of that, we had four or five great big old mats.
Mats?
On the floor. And you can imagine how dirty and filthy they'd be. I seen us have to put them over us at night to keep us warm on top of the beds. And old, pup's old work clothes, no coats, anything we get a hold of to put over us for bed clothes.
Now, you just said about putting old mats over you for warmth at night. I'm going to read you an excerpt from the Chronicle Herald, and it was written by Jesse Hoyt, who in 1866 was the manager of the Acadia Coal Company. And this is what he wrote. The town at Acadia Mines will be the most systematically built in the province. Streets with clean graveled sidewalks, ornamented with shade trees, which are laid off at right angles. Along these streets, neat and commodious dwelling houses are being built, boarded and shingled on the outside and plastered inside. This will render them comfortable in the coldest weather. There is a quiet air of neatness and cleanliness pervading the place, which cannot fail to arrest the attention of the visitor. Now, what I've just read is what is now known as the Asheville. He's describing the area you grew up in and where you've lived. And that's what he had to say about it when it was new and built. Now, when you were growing up here, you were born in 1915. It would have been a few years after it was born, but the area still wouldn't have been that old. Do you remember your houses being really warm and your streets being really clean and it being a lovely place for visitors to look?
No, I'll tell you what our walls were. There were boards now there.
Boards?
Yeah. In that kitchen, that's all it was all boards.
How cold were the houses?
How cold? You couldn't believe it, Sam. You get up in the morning, the kettle would be frozen on the stove, the taps would be frozen. You just couldn't believe how cold. Water in the face pan or anything that was in the sink or that was always froze, just near froze to death. My father would take the ashes that would come out of the stoves from burning the coal and bank the house around with it, but still it never ever kept it warm. We just nearly froze to death.
Wonderful. hard to believe.
And I guess for nightgowns and pajamas or anything like that, we didn't know what any of them things were. We never had night clothes to wear to clothes.
Just day. What you wore just in the day, you wore at night.
Yeah, right.
And as far as education goes, you never finished your grade 2, is that correct?
No, because like I say, I had to stay home. We used to have to go there and pick blueberries, pick coal. And when the strike was on, we had to go down there to beg for something to eat. Be down there when it came, if you weren't there.
You missed out.
You missed out on it. And I've seen us kids sit down there, hang around down there all day long, waiting for it to come in. And then maybe we'd get a jug of molasses or a bag of flour or a bag of sugar or something like that to take home.
And be thankful that you got that.
Yeah, right.
Something, now maybe you have no memories of this, but when there were disasters in the mines, they would close the pits down for 3 days and then they would reopen them. Can you remember any feelings in your house about your father having to go back into the pits after there was a disaster?
Well,
were you scared, or did your mother seem scared?
We, in them days right there was no disasters then that early. It was later on, see, that the disasters were.
So it was considered to be a fairly safe type
of figured in them, because I never used to hear them say anything, you know, about having any fear going down or that.
Do you know if they used to drink when they were in the pits? I know that drinking was a big problem when they were sort of at their time off.
Right, but I don't know. I don't think it was in the pits. I know on the weekends the miners would all drink. Mm-hmm. They used to make homebrew.
Homebrew?
Yeah, they'd make their own and have it like homebrew. And on the weekends they always drank, but then they always went back to their work like on Monday morning again, if there was any.
Do you remember anything about the company stores where you could buy stuff on tick and it was taken off your check? Did your family ever use it?
Well, maybe.
Not that you before, remember.
Not that I can remember. Maybe my mother would remember that, but I couldn't remember that.
Going back to Hoyt's quote in the Chronicle Herald, he mentions how clean the area was. Was it a fairly clean area to live in?
Well, where we lived and all our neighbors on that street, they all had outside toilets, and there was a coal house, we called it, connected to it. And they'd go all winter long, and when the spring would come, they had a couple of men that would come around to clean those toilets out. But whenever the thaw would break in the spring, from those toilets, all of the mess that was in them would all run out right on the street, right where we lived. It would just ooze out right over the street, the water and all the mess. And then they'd start about in June, hot summer nights, they'd come around, they'd clean those toilets out with a horse and dump cart, a couple of men in those days. Get up all that night, you couldn't sleep for the stink and the smell off it. Because we're just out of this world, you couldn't believe what it smelled like. And then when you get up the next morning, it would be all scattered from one end of the street to the other, where they'd miss the cart when they were throwing it in.
Doesn't sound very clean.
Say that again. And when you say it don't sound very clean, like in our house, we were just alive with fleas, because those straw ticks that we used, it just seemed to be a nest for fleas and bed bugs. You couldn't sleep at night in the summer. In the winter they didn't seem to be so bad. I think it was so cold that they didn't bother so much, but in the hot summer nights the fleas and the bed bugs would near eat you alive.
And as kids, you used to go sleep on the grass to get away from
lots of times we'd sleep out in hot summer nights outside. I know I did, rather than wouldn't have to sleep in that. And then we were always lousy. I can remember my mother taking kerosene oil that we used to use in the lamps. That's what she used to put in our heads to kill the lice and the nits and that in our heads.
And you were no exception. Other people everybody was like this.
Sure, especially on that street over there where we live.
And that's called Brown Row,
is
it?
That's Brown Row. And our heads would get sore. I know mine. That was one reason why I wouldn't go to school. I was ashamed. The kids used to laugh at me, make fun of me. Well, she cut big blotches out of my hair, where there'd be sores, and she cut it all around, and that, I suppose, from scratching and that, you know, from the lice and that. And she put the kerosene oil on it, and near burned the head off, you know, wonder we had sores in our heads. And I used to wear this old stocking cap because I was so ashamed of my hair being like that, all sores and that. And when I did go to school there, I can remember in grade two there how the kids all made fun of me, and they'd pull that cap off, and I'd cry and cry.
What about medical care? Do you ever remember seeing a doctor when you were a kid?
No, we had a doctor, an old Dr. Whitman.
Was he a company doctor, or was he just a public doctor?
Just a public doctor, I think, but the miners paid to him through their pay.
Oh, they
at
did?
The mine.
So they had like a benefit in a sense, it was,
yeah,
like Blue Cross is today.
Yeah, he had an office down in Stellarton there, and like we used to go down there, and there'd be cough syrup there. They used to put this cough syrup with creosote in it. And then he had some kind of a pill that was supposed to be like an aspirin is today.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, I think that was all that we ever got there. But I can remember my mother mixing up sulfur and molasses. We used to get infantago from dirt and all that. I guess that's where it came from. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Isn't that where infantago comes from?
I think so, yeah.
Well, we'd get those sores all over us, and she used to mix up the sulfur and molasses and use that on them. It was yellow.
Did it work?
I guess it worked out.
Did something.
They got better anyway, something got better. But then as the years went by, and after that strike was over and they went back, I just don't know. The OBU didn't get in here that time. I think the UMW still stayed in here, or the AMW, I don't know which. But anyway, it was still hard times. And that was when I was getting a little older then. Well, then I started to go out to work.
How old would you be?
Well, I'd only be 9 or 10.
9 or 10 years old, and you left home to go to work?
Right. I got a job at a school. The school teacher that I had in grade two, Barb McClellan was her name. She lived in Plymouth. It would be about 2 miles from our place over to their place. I went over there to work for her. I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning there and walk over that 2 miles down the railroad track and all the shortcuts I could take. And I'd work over there all day for her, washing and washing clothes on the washboard and scrubbing and ironing. And I'd come home at night. And by this time, there was a lot more children at home. Mama had more children, like I say, every year, less than a year, she had one. And when I came home at night, there was no place for me to sleep. In our kitchen, all we had was an old wooden table and a kitchen stove, a couple of chairs with no backs on them, and they had orange crates that the oranges used to come in them days. They were wooden.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we used to sit on. I'd sleep there on two of them chairs in an orange crate with an old coat over me. No wonder
You've got such back problems
no
today.
No wonder I got back problems today.
And you would only be a child yourself, 9 or 10 years old.
Well, I wouldn't be. I'd be around 9 or 10. Because right after that, I left over there when this farmer that lived in West River, he used to come in around town peddling stuff. And that summer, I suppose it would be, I don't know what year it would be in. It would have to be maybe 27, 28, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me to go out and pick strawberries out at their farm to work. So I went out there to work. Well, another girl and I went. Well, we worked out there, started in the summer of picking strawberries. And then we had to do barn work, milk cows, and do the outside barn work, and even the chop.
Must have seemed great compared to what you were used
to. Well, I was getting something to eat. And had a good roof over my head and a nice clean bed and warm bed to sleep in.
And did you get your money when they paid you? Was the money
yours?
I
worked there picking the strawberries, and then I worked in the house. I stayed there for good near 3 years, and I got $8 a month, $2 a week, but I got paid by the month. And when I got that $8 a month, I had to take it and give it to my mother over in Brown Mill to help them out, because they were still just like it was back in the early 20s.
And it hadn't changed for them at
hadn't
all.
Hadn't changed. No,
and you were lucky. You had gotten out.
Yeah.
And you had.
Well,
out.
I had to get out. They got that there were so many over there. There was no place. And
now they were still in a house that had only two bedrooms when all these extra children kept coming.
They had two downstairs and one up.
So they had a total of three
but
bedrooms.
They only used like those two. My mother and father had one downstairs, and
they
there was
had
one downstairs, and they only used that one upstairs. But there was only the two beds upstairs, although there was two bedrooms. We didn't have another bed. And downstairs, there was only the two bedrooms. That was the four bedrooms for my mother and father and all those kids. And like I said, there was no place to sleep. So I just kept going from place to place. When I got through working up there in the country, I came back home. Well, I didn't go back home. I came here to the Ash Belt, and I went to work for people here in the Ash Belt, like a woman, Mrs. McKenzie. Her father ran a bait shop out at Beer Brook out there, and I just about brought her kids up because they found it hard, although they had more than we had, and she used to go and work to help her father. Because he'd give her stuff at the bake shop, like bread and stuff like that, and I looked after her children, done her housework while she worked out there. And I had to do all that work. I even used to bake for her, although she was out there. I'd do all her washing, and that was on the washboard and the old wash tub.
So you were a child raising a family of children?
I was only 10, 11 years old. Like I said, I wasn't 11 when I went out to the country to work. And I can remember one time my mother and my sister coming out there, and we were over in the field. They were baling the hay. You know how they do it all up in the big bales? Mm-hmm. And I was forking it on the wagons and that. And I know my mother and my sister, they near had a fit. They couldn't believe it. But I used to lift them up there like nothing. Of course, they're paying for it today.
I guess you are.
They could never believe that. You know, that you worked like that.
Now, TB used to
well,
be quite common, didn't it, amongst
right.
the mining families?
Well, that's right. Well, I had a sister and I had a brother that died with TB. My sister, she was the oldest. She had taken TB. In those days, there was a sanatorium, but you had to have money to go to it. You couldn't go to it.
There was no sort of Nova Scotia MSI to help you out.
Nothing. So,
and there were no policies, no benefits, being a minor. He didn't have any
nothing.
Health benefits other than this doctor who he could get
nothing.
Cough syrup.
The only ones that could go to the sanatorium in that days were the people that had money.
So you had to sit by and watch your family die.
So the town of Stellarton, like there was no relief or anything in those days. Like today you can go down to the town or go to the welfare and all that. We didn't have any place to go to get anything. I seen my mother sell her wedding ring for $2 to buy my brother a pair of gumboots, we called them in those days, to go to work on the town. Sold her wedding ring for $2. She never got it back. Pawned it, like, you know, at a pawn shop. She never got it back.
So that he could have boots to go to work?
To go to work. That was Chuck.
How did you deal with someone with TB? I mean, TB is a contagious disease.
Well, this is it. The town of Stellarton built a little shack out in our backyard, and that would be between the toilet and our house, right in the middle of the yard. They built this little shack. It was just boards around the bottom. And
like a chicken coop?
Well, just about like that. Halfway around, they boarded it in. There was one door in it. There was no windows in it. They took factory cotton. This was just plain yellow cotton. Like my mother used to make the ticks out of it. They took that and they nailed that all up around, halfway up. And she lived out in that shack, winter and summer. In the winter, she had TB. In the winter, she had to have a stocking cap on her head and mitts on her hands and big sweater on her and socks. And my mother used to have to take brick and put them in the oven and get them hot and take down there and put in there for her. And she lived there like that with no medication because they loved, there was nothing for her outside of fresh air in those days. And to eat, the neighbors that lived around there, that's about all she ever got to eat, what they brought into her.
Because there would be not much left over from the house.
No. And then my brother, he had taken TB, and they put him in there with her. And it was only a little 2x4, just big enough for two little cots in it. That's all that was in it.
And that was their life.
And a lamp, an oil lamp, that Mum would light in there for her.
How long?
And my mother was crippled, and she had to go from that house down to there winter and summer looking after her.
How long did they live in this outbuilding?
She must have been in there 3 years before she
that
ever
long?
Died. My brother didn't last that long. She was only 18 when she died. My brother was only 70 when he died.
So they would be two young people who had to spend their entire nights and days inside this shack.
Right.
Did they use the same outhouse as you, or did you have to have a separate one for them?
They used a bucket for her. My mother had to empty it, or us kids had to empty it. They died just like dogs, I'm telling you.
They didn't die as good as dogs,
no,
from the sounds of it.
No, because I know if we had a dog today, we'd look after it and take it to a vet and everything. Like, the doctor never used to come to see her or anything.
And this is the company doctor, he wouldn't even come.
No. Well, what they loved, there was nothing they could do. Like I said, you couldn't go to the sand, there was nothing else. There was no medication or anything for her.
It's a wonder you all didn't contact her.
Well, this is it. I don't know how we never ever did, even my mother. And all my other brothers and sisters.
What do you remember as far as good times growing up as a kid? Are there any?
Well, there's good times. Well, I can't remember any good times as a kid. Like I say, we never had milk to drink. I still don't like milk to this day.
You can't drink it?
No, I never had it, and I can't drink it.
Was she able to give milk to the newborn babies?
Well, yes. There used to be a milk wagon come around, and she'd scrape, which
for the little
other
ones.
That for the babies, because she could never nurse her babies.
No, she wouldn't have the nutrition herself to do it.
She didn't.
Now, you were saying earlier that your family was, they lived right beside the pit there, the mine,
yeah.
And that they moved you out because it was too dangerous?
Yeah, because there was a big powder place there where they used to keep the powder that they used to use in the pit, you know, for blasting and that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was too dangerous for us to live there.
Where did they move you to?
Well, they moved us not too far up from the hill, and it was a place called Evansville, but then they named it Bullpen.
How did it ever get the name Bullpen?
Well, it seems though when the strike was on out there, the scabs and all that, they roped it all off.
Therefore it was the Bullpen.
That's right, and it was called Bullpen.
And it's still called that to this day, I've heard
by
it.
By some of them, yeah, sure.
Now what about, I mean, times were so tough when you were a kid, and you don't remember that many good times, but what about things that all kids do, like Christmas time and coasting and skating? And
well, for coasting, we took an old piece of cardboard box, and that's what we coasted on. And the coldest night in winter, we'd be on that hill over there coasting, and, which I said, we never had a pair of shoes hardly to put on our feet.
You didn't have shoes in the winter?
We'd take old socks and pull them on our feet. Many of the time we had to get in the house early enough because there'd be Papa's old work socks.
And he'd need them
and
to go to work.
And he'd need them to go to work. And many of the time...
You mean you were out in the snow with just a pair of work socks on your feet?
Socks, old socks, ones with holes and ones with no holes. We'd pull them around and the heels be out of them. We'd turn them around to the front and pull another old pair over them. We'd have to come in and get them socks off and dry them on the oven door for Papa to go to work on the back shift.
So in the wintertime, you were without shoes, too?
Right.
And like, I take it there was a lot more snow then, and the winters were colder than they are today.
They weren't like today. They were really cold in those days, and snow, too.
What about coats?
Rags. Never knew what it was to ever buy. I have a new coat bought or anything. Something that someone would give us or that. You couldn't believe it, I'm telling you. But you couldn't. My mother would take flour sacks of the flour, she'd get the flour bags in, get the flour would come in those bags to make a pair of pants or a dress. Many times she'd set by hand and sew them to make us.
What about
pants.
Christmas? Do you remember Christmas as being any different than any other time of the year?
at Christmas time, we never knew what it was to have Christmas.
Had you ever heard about Santa Claus?
Yes, we heard about Santa Claus. The church would come maybe around midnight on Christmas Eve night. My mother wouldn't have one thing in the house, in a toy or fruit or candy or anything else. The Church of England would come there, a lady that belonged to it. They run a store down in Stellarton here. And her and her sons, her son had a little pony and a sled. She'd come there right late on a Christmas Eve night and bring a little wee Christmas tree, and there was a gift on that little tree. But that wasn't all the years. I can remember a couple of years of that, where she'd come and they'd bring that little tree. There'd be an orange each for us, and a little bit of candy from that, and one little toy. I never remember ever having a doll. Never in my life did I remember ever having a doll.
Now, you were saying earlier that you did not even finish a grade 2. What do you remember about going to school? Do you remember anything at all about school?
Oh, yes, I remember going, a little bit I did go. Like the other kids there at school, the ones that had more than we had and that, the down street there, they'd take their lunch and they used to make cocoa at the school there.
You could buy it at the school, or it was given to you?
No, right, you could buy it for a cent a cup. And I never, ever had a cup of that cocoa, because I never, ever had a cent to buy
it. Not even a penny to get a cup
of
cocoa.
That's right. And I can remember me taking my bread and molasses, the bread that had no sugar or shortening or anything in it, wrapped in an old piece of newspaper, which is wax paper, and that we never knew what that was in those days.
Newspaper.
It was either newspapers or brown paper. And when you get there and open up that piece of bread with that molasses all soaked through it, no butter on it, just the molasses, you were ashamed to death because other kids would laugh at you. And
but were there other kids in the school in the same position as you?
Oh, lots of them, especially over there where we lived and right up here in the Ashbuffton. Had the same thing.
Mm-hmm. But there were kids that did have it a little better off. And
well, yes, that would be
cocoa.
The ones that...
Their fathers were not miners.
That's right. That's right.
But the majority of the people here did mine for a living. They were mining families.
That's right.
And it was the exception that wasn't.
That's right.
Now, you were a large family trying to live on very little money, probably. You were lucky if your father cleared $2 a week. By the time everything was taken off, he wouldn't have cleared that if he was only working maybe 3 days a week, and he was lucky to get three
he'd
days.
He'd get a pay. Even ask my mother, he'd get a pay, maybe three and four, two something, three something, maybe four something.
On a good week it would be four, but it would usually be around two
right.
and a half, $3.
Right. After everything was taken
was
off.
There any extra money other than what you kids brought in that
well,
ever came into the house?
Well, us kids, we couldn't bring anything in, you know, in them days until, like, I got out and went to work. But my mother did make a beer, homebrew, they called it. Tried to make a few cents at selling it. She used to sell it for 25 cents a quart on the weekend.
Bootleg liquor.
Bootleg liquor. They used to make it. They'd make it out of molasses. And
did your mother drink herself?
No, my mother never touched liquor.
She's never touched a drop of liquor
in
her life?
Never all her life drank.
But she was able to get a few dollars
at selling that home brew to put in a bite to eat for us.
Having to do something that she just didn't believe in at all, but it brought in a few dollars.
That's right. The miners on the weekend would come, they'd buy it for 25 cents a bottle.
Was there a lot of alcohol in those days? I mean,
No,
there wasn't.
Not like today, like, no, there wasn't. You know, there was more than her that made homebrew around and sold it. Like where we lived, there was another family there that made it and sold it.
There was?
Yeah.
But liquor wasn't, you didn't have the alcoholics like you do today?
No, I never ever seen a bottle of hard liquor in our home outside of that homebrew.
That was all
that
you
was
knew
beer.
Was liquor,
yeah.
And that was beer.
There was no liquor stores in those days. I think if you wanted hard liquor or something in those days, you had to get a prescription to go somewhere to get it.
Oh, that's right, because it would have been in temperance.
Yeah.
Prohibition.
Yeah.
Prohibition would have been on. Did you ever have any trouble with the law, people coming down and trying to fine you for selling homebrew?
No, they never ever bothered. I don't know why.
Did they knew you were doing it?
Just the same. Yeah, well, yes. The town police. There was town police here in them days, but they never ever bothered us. And just like not going to school. If you wanted to go, you went. And if you didn't, well, there was nothing to it. You didn't go, just like us. We never had anything to wear half the time to go. And we did go, like, all summer long. We went on our bare feet. And like me, with a rag of a dress on made out of flower sack. No shoes, no socks.
What about the personal items, like underpants and slips and stockings?
Well, we didn't know what a slip was. And like I say, my mother would make pants out of the flower sacks.
Mm-hmm. Were these underpants?
Underpants, right. And same for a dress.
So it was more like a starched uniform that you were wearing than anything else.
There wouldn't be even any starch in a preserve. We couldn't even afford starch. We're lucky we had soap. And the time I went bumming around for my mother looking for soap and that to wash with.
What about when she brought babies home? What did they sleep in? Did you have cribs and cots? And
we had an old cradle. Mm-hmm. That's what done the... And if not, they slept in the beds with her and Papa.
In the beds with
the parents? With them, yes. And as they got bigger, they were all piled into one bed. Three and four into a bed. Two at the top and two at the bottom. I can remember Chuck and myself and my other sister and brother, two at the top and two at the bottom on them old straw beds. The straw coming right through the cotton that was on it and sticking into you all night long.
Now, I've heard your mother say that your father used to get a lot of literature from foreign countries.
That's right.
From the different unions, and that a lot of this would be communist literature?
Yes. There used to be a man come to our place, and he used to bring it to Papa. Papa could never ever afford to buy. He didn't have much schooling, but he read. And read, he educated himself by reading, because those people used to bring him those books and papers, and he read everything he could get his hands on. Like this literature that they used to bring to Papa to read, it wasn't really communist, it was more social. Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm. It's more a socialist type of literature.
That's right, yeah. He used to read.
Did he ever read it to you kids?
No, he never, because like I say, we never...
You were never all around as a family.
No, and like for, well, I don't know. It was never like Kevin's mother and father. There was never any love or anything.
People were too busy
like
trying to get your bite to
that's
eat.
Right.
And really, you were just another mouth to feed.
That's right.
And the sooner you could look after yourself, the better.
Yes. Okay, I had to go. Like I say, my younger sister than me again, she had to stay there and help Mama comfort being a cripple and that, but I wouldn't stay when I did get old enough. That's why I got there.
Now, as kids playing, were you ever around the pit area playing?
Oh, yes. We lived, there's just the road between us and the pit. I remember my brother and myself and my sister then. We didn't have so many children, you know, right then at that time. But we always played it. We called it the slack pile. We always played there on
slack pile?
Yeah, it was all coal and that was, you know, really fine and had been lying there for years. We always played there on that. And then we always went up to the big barn, the company barn. That's where they kept the horses. And the sleds and that they used for those horses was just across just the road between that and our house. And I used to play over there on those sleds all the time. And they used to put the shafts up high when the sleds were parked there. And there's a scar I got there in my foot where one day the shafts fell down and smashed my foot.
Did the men at the pits, like the men in charge, the company men, did they never try to shoo you away? I mean,
no,
it would have been such a danger for young children.
We were always over around the wash house there where the miners washed. We weren't allowed inside when the miners would come up at the pit. They'd tractor right by there, and you'd stand there and watch.
Nobody ever warned you about falling into the open shafts, or there was no security of any type?
No. We lived there, I don't know how many years we lived there.
And your mother and father never tried to keep you away?
No. Let's just say they never ever seemed to bother with us. I know my kids, you know. Let them, you know, today.
You couldn't even imagine letting them do that.
But then we used to be up around them barns where the horses were, and all over the place they were flying. And there was another house right on the other side of the mine where the miners went down, and we used to cross over there and go over there and play with a couple more kids that lived over there.
Were you aware, as a child and living in this type of environment, were you aware of what the rest of the world was like, or did you think that everybody lived like
this? No, I don't think we even thought.
This was just your reality, that was it?
That was it.
Did you have radio?
No.
Not even radio?
No.
So there was no radio. There was no television, of course.
No, we had no power. There was just kerosene lamps in those days.
So you had nothing, really, unless you could read, and you couldn't afford the literature.
No.
So there was nothing to associate you with the outside world?
No, what was to ever buy a newspaper or anything just outside of that literature that my father got. And that was all on the Cotoga.
Did your family ever have a car or a vehicle?
Never. I'm like us kids, we never knew what was to ever have a pair of skates or a bike or a cart or anything.
Life was pretty bleak.
Like I say, we made our own. We went and posted on cardboard boxes and old barrel states. They used to get them round wooden barrels, take them apart and use half of them for a coast down the hill. So.
Now, you left home when you were 10 years old.
I went to the country to work, and I stayed out there for 3 years out there. And after I came back from the country, well, I just bummed around from house to house here in the Asheville, working for a roof over my head and a bite to eat. I never ever got paid, but I was glad to get it, and I worked and worked hard for big families and small families, washing and scrubbing and cleaning.
How old were you when you got married?
When I got married, I was married in October. And I would have been 15 in November.
So you weren't 15 years old? You were a child yourself?
I met this fella, he was a minor too, and of course I got pregnant, and I had no other choice but get married. My mother couldn't take me, or there were so many of her home there.
She still had babies herself?
Right. So we got married.
And he was a minor?
He was a minor. We were married in October, and like I say, I was 15 in November, and we went to live with another couple that lived on the same street we lived in.
Would they be your age?
Yeah, well, a little older than I.
But still
than
young
us,
people
but
themselves.
Still young. And we boarded there, and I had my first baby in March of that next year. Mm-hmm. And it was really cold. The snow was so high.
You didn't go to the hospital to have your baby?
No, you didn't go to the hospital in those days to have your babies. You had them at home. I had a midwife that came in and looked to me.
Was that provided by the company?
No, we had to pay that midwife out of our own pocket.
There were no benefits of any kind,
no,
again,
whatever,
to the company?
Even to your doctor when you had him, then he had a fee. I just can't remember how much his fee was to come to the house mm-hmm. to deliver your baby. But I can remember the place that we lived in. It was a house, the same amount of rooms and that as the one we lived in.
A company house.
Company house. And like there was two bedrooms downstairs. We had one bedroom downstairs. And they had a pot belly stove in the dining room. That's what they heated the house with. And in that bedroom, that night I had my baby, I had a great big woolen sweater off my husband's on and socks. And when the doctor came that night and the midwife was there, she had a pan of water and it got spilled on the floor. And when the doctor came, it was ice all over the floor.
And you were having a baby?
I was lying there in the bed in labor because my baby was so big that it had to be an instrument baby. And him and her both were slipping and falling all over that floor.
And that's how your
ice.
Child first entered the world,
that's
in a
right.
room with ice on the floor.
Anyway,
in a warm company house, as Hoyt said earlier.
It wasn't very warm because that water froze right there and then on the floor. It was in March.
Were times any better now? Your husband, now you were married to a minor. Were things any better for him, or were they basically the same working conditions your father had?
We still, they were starting to get a little better then. This would be in the early 30s. We got, like I say, we lived there for a while, and then we went and we rented a little place. Things were getting a little better then, but it was still hard. You know, we seen days that we didn't have anything to eat. Much, like, you know, outside maybe just potatoes or something like that, mm-hmm. but we had a hard struggle of it.
Were you able to help your parents out at all, or the other babies at home?
No way, because my mother was still, they were still living right up from us, and like I had a sister, she was only in her early teens then, she couldn't get away to get out to go to work, she had to stay home there and look after and help my mother with mm-hmm. the children and that, but still there wasn't any more money coming in.
So your parents' situation did not improve as they got older? It stayed the same?
No. Then...
And yours, your situation was pretty much the same
as
theirs?
Well, mine was getting a little better, yes, because I did get out of that and we moved away from there, and it was getting on late into the 30s mm-hmm. then, and it did get a little better up until in the 30s. Things were so bad over there with the depression with my mother and father, that's mm-hmm. my younger sisters and brothers had to be taken and put into a home, the Orange Lodge of Stellarton.
These were the younger children who couldn't go out to work and support themselves.
That's right, they were in ages from, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, up like that.
They were put in a foster home? They weren't adopted out, it was
a foster home.
How many kids would that have been to go in the home?
Well, there was 5 that went in the home at that time, aging from 5 to 10 years old. There was an Orange home.
Now, your parents were planning to get these children back when things got better?
Yes, but things never got any better. My mother ended up going, my father got sick then. From miners' lung disease, and he got that he couldn't work anymore.
And your mother had a mastectomy at the same time, did she not?
Yes, she had her breast taken off mm-hmm. in those days.
It was a major operation.
Right.
And what happened to these other children?
Well, they all ended up over in the Orange Lodge, mm-hmm. put them in the home over in Toro.
They were all put over in that would be the home in Bible Hill, would it not?
Yes.
And did your parents ever see these children again? Do you know these kids, or did they grow up with other families?
Well,
did they come back?
They were in the home there, and then they were put out into foster homes, is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got one brother that was taken over in Toro, and then my another brother, he was taken down to Cape Breton. He was only down there for a year or so. When he went in the pit down there to work, he lied about his age, and then by this time war broke out, he lied again about his age, and he joined the army, and he was over in Italy and France and them on the 16th birthday.
Oh my lord.
They didn't have a pair of shoes small enough in the army to fit him, and he went in. So
the family was split up?
That's right.
You had brothers and sisters in Cape Breton, a brother that was adopted out by another family.
Right.
So your family was completely split up.
That's right.
And yet you all managed to get back in touch with each other?
Yes. Over the years.
Well, that's good. It's unusual that you would get back together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were saying about how hard up times were and how your mother used to really scrape to get your father a lunch can ready so that he could go to work. I'm going to read you an excerpt here out of a book. It's Jim Cameron's, Tony and Collier's, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "The miner carried food and drink underground in lunch cans and bottles. In the bottle was tea, black or white, with or without sugar, according to taste."
Well,
would your father have had the opportunity of milk and sugar in his tea?
No. He might have had sugar if we got any from anyone or that, But my father carried black tea, and like I say, if there was any sugar to put in it, he got it. If not,
it also says here, perhaps a smelt or two in season, or a boiled egg, biscuits, pastry, and always bread with butter and molasses.
Well, we never knew what pastry was. The only thing we ever knew, like I tell you, was that bread and molasses.
So he would pack a lunch can with that
bread and molasses.
And black tea if he was
right,
lucky.
Right.
And what else does he say here? What oatmeal was to the farmer, bread and molasses was to the miner. You'd go along with that, would you? It was bread and molasses
that
you grew up with.
And porridge.
And porridge, so you had
like
the oatmeal also.
Like I've seen us go to school, porridge and molasses in the morning. We come home at dinner time, there'd be porridge and molasses again. That's why I can't eat molasses today, or porridge.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time today. I've taken the better part of your day. I've been here since 10, and it's 3:30 now. So thank you very much for all your time and your information.
Well, like I always said, my sister and I, we often talk about and say that we could write a book on our lives, and the tobacco road would have nothing on it.
Thanks again.
Thank you.